Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
All right, I've noted a couple times. Tonight on ESPN, the first airing of the Deion 30 for 30, Deion's double play, for those of you who lived through it, or those of you who have no idea, two-sport athlete who within the same 24 hours back in 1992 was with the Atlanta Falcons playing in an NFL game and then rushed off to join the Atlanta Braves for a World Series game that night. Duly noting, he did not get in that World Series game, but he got there and was available and did play in the subsequent World Series game. Love him or hate him, there's room for both. Deion always moved the needle. Ken Rogers, the director of Deion's double play, first airing tonight, and as I earlier noted, the U of H game is at 6. So, give or take, that's over at 8. At 8, flip over from ESPN2 to ESPN, and your night is made. Ken, it's Charlie in Houston. I appreciate the time. I guess for openers, is it sort of a 24-hour diary? Can you give the overall context of the documentary?
Yeah, it really focuses on that 24 hours. But to really tell the story of that 24 hours, you have to figure out who Deion Sanders is, and that's where we start the film. And little did I know how divided Deion was, not just between two sports, but between two personalities. The fact that in college he created a character known as Primetime in order to up his stock in the NFL. He knew that cornerbacks were not paid well. There was no such thing as a shutdown corner back then. So he marketed himself and created a persona that was larger than life because, of course, the NFL loved individuality and outspoken stars at the time, and still do, compared to baseball. But when he played baseball, which he had always done since he was 7 years old, he had to be Deion Sanders. So he really split time not just between sports but between personas. So we explore that in the film, how the difference between Primetime and Deion came to be.
How much of that would you attribute to the nature of baseball, the everyday sport, the marathon grind, and you can't dance and go crazy emotionally and just be wired and then some, mm-hmm. the way that football much more naturally lends itself to?
And I think it's still that way today. And Stan Kasten, the then president of the Braves and now president of the Dodgers, you know, talks about it, about how, like, today you still can't, you know, you're looked down upon if you stare at your home run too long, if you flip your bat. Well, I mean, Deion was the type of personality that would start Cadillacing at the 50-yard line with an interception and putting his hand behind his neck and high-stepping for 50 yards. Talk about showing off. I mean, he was the ultimate at that. And he wasn't allowed to do that in baseball. And there really was an unwritten code of stay low-key, stay quiet, just be a team player. And I think the baseball people, especially with the Braves, really pushed back on Deion's attempt to play both sports in 2 days because they felt it drew too much individual attention.
Well, obviously, to become a major league athlete in any sport, you're in the super elite, you know, teensy-weensy percentage. Those able to do it at a high level in both, and Deion's one of the greatest football players of all time. Baseball, there's a lot of what if had he committed full-time to it. Deion, split personalities aside, never been the seemingly most modest of guys.
No.
Does he address, if he'd gone all baseball, does he think he'd have been Ricky Henderson and then some?
Certainly a lot of people thought he would be. Ricky Henderson, maybe not then some, but Ricky Henderson-type player. Certainly, could have taken the place of the Braves' full-time guy in that spot, Otis Nixon at the time. And I think it's something that Deion still thinks about. It's very clear at the end of the film, he goes on this soliloquy about the difference between football and baseball, that he doesn't dream about football anymore. He's a Hall of Famer. He's probably the best player at his position in the history of the game, and yet he still dreams about playing baseball, about hitting the ball in the gap and rounding second and sliding into third. I mean, in 1992, the year we covered, he only played 97 games, but he led the entire MLB in triples with 14. I mean, he played two sports, but he excelled pretty well in his second sport. So you got to think, if he put the time in that he put in the football, that we might be talking about Deion Sanders, the Hall of Famer for baseball, and you might be going to visit his plaque in Cooperstown instead of his bust in Canton.
Talking with Ken Rogers, director of the Deion's Double Play 30 for 30, which debuts tonight, 8 o'clock on ESPN, 8 o'clock our time. Ken, if you want to, hey, you're off an hour. Anyone reasonable in that time had to marvel at the sheer level of ability to do what Deion was doing. Was there in either direction a resentment sense, right, the fraternity within the locker room of a single team? Hey, if you're not entirely with us, you're not against us, but you're not with us. We're in the World Series here. What are you doing running off to play a football game, even if one football game represents a much larger chunk of a football schedule than one baseball game out of 162, or vice versa within the Braves and Falcons?
Yeah, well, that's what the whole film is about. And I can tell you that I was shocked, because you would think that both teams would be upset. None of the players we spoke to were upset. They understood that, hey, this is a guy that has so much talent. If he's here, he helps us. If he's not here, you know, that stinks. But we want him here as much as possible. If he can split time, great. That's bonus for us. The management didn't see it that way. I will say that the Falcons were very understanding compared to the Braves, I think, because of that difference between baseball and football. I also think that their head coach, Jerry Glanville, had a much different viewpoint on things than Bobby Cox with the Braves, or certainly John Schuerholz, the GM of the Braves, who is really a central figure in the fight here that happened over this event. And the players were all fine with it. I think the Falcons were fine with it. The Braves are still not fine with it. You know, John Schuerholz is on record in the film plenty, but he even refused to be part of this film because 26 years later, it still causes so much angst that Deion would leave in the middle of a NLCS and go play a football game. And in Deion's mind, he was trying to be loyal to both his loves. But one of the loves doesn't see it that way. I think the Braves really saw it as infidelity.
So do you think for Schuerholz and anyone else on the Braves side of the coin, would it be viewed any differently if they'd won that 1992 World Series? Would it be bygones, or was it still just against the constitution of what a team player is supposed to be?
Yeah, I don't think anything could have fixed it. I mean, they ended up coming to a long-term contract, and it still didn't fix it, and he got traded. So nothing could have really done this. In fact, I think if they won the World Series, there's a good chance, if you look at the numbers, that Deion Sanders would have been the Braves' MVP in that series. He batted .533, led everyone in the World Series. He was pretty great in that World Series. So if he would have won MVP, he says in the film what he would have done, and that's you know, kind of show off in front of Schuerholz. I think that would have made it worse in some ways.
You alluded to Jerry Glanville, so a Houston connection, decades removed now, but for those who go far enough back with the Oilers to Glanville's tenure, you did a sit-down with him. How cantankerous was Jerry?
Jerry Glanville is Jerry Glanville.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's it's great. You know, in this context, it's all positive, but he was very adamant about his approach to this. And he was supportive of Deion, and I think still is. That being said, when the cameras go off, you know, Glanville's still a tier one personality in NFL history.
I presume Deion has seen the final cut that airs tonight. What feedback did you get?
I'm sorry?
I would presume, but maybe not, that Deion has seen what airs the rest of us for the first time tonight. What feedback did you get from Deion himself?
So we had a premiere here yesterday in Atlanta, here at the Super Bowl. I'm actually here at Radio Row right now. And, you know, Deion got a standing ovation and went up, and he was actually more Deion Sanders than primetime. He wasn't very showy about it. He was very humble and thankful that people like the film, and I think you'll see both sides of Deion. You'll be entertained by him, and I think plenty of people will watch it and be annoyed by him. And that's really the genius of the character he created. As he says in the film, love him or hate him, you have to watch him play.
Well, I'll have the DVR working tonight. Get home from the U of H basketball game, and we'll take a watch. Deion's Double Play, 8 o'clock hour time. There will be subsequent airings, and then via the app you can access ESPN+, et cetera, et cetera. Ken Rogers, the director, sounds like it was a lot of fun for you to do, so congrats on it, and thanks for the time.
Thank you, sir.